I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, represented by CBS News Radio. And my longtime colleague and friend, Joseph Sternberg of the Wall Street Journal, I was with him in Hong Kong. Now I'm with him in London. Joe writes the political economics column for the Wall Street Journal editorial board. He's a member of the editorial board. He's based in London. He has observed the transformation of Europe from a burgeoning economy, arguing about Brexit in 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, to an economy on the mainland that is quite distinctly worried about the virus. However, Joe's in London. He's in the United Kingdom, which is now separated from the EU in more ways than five. Joe, a very good evening to you. I must begin with the good news. A large percentage of the population of the United Kingdom, the vulnerable population, is now reported vaccinated with AstraZeneca, which is a vaccine that was conducted, conceived in conjunction with the University of Oxford. Is that celebrated in the news in London? Does the Prime Minister's office emphasize how many people are now protected from the virus? Good evening to you, Joe.
Hey, John. Yes, it's spectacular news over here. So the latest I've heard is that they say that more than half of the adult population has been vaccinated, which translates to around 40-ish percent of the overall population. They say that they have made progress on vaccinating or offering vaccines to nearly all of the particularly elderly who are eligible for it. And then they claim that by the middle of April, they will have offered back the first dose of the vaccine to all of the people who have medical conditions that would make them more vulnerable to the virus. And the good, you can see the good news around you. I mean, it has been a month at least since anyone was concerned about the hospitals being overcrowded. The cases of serious illness, the daily death toll is declining precipitously. There's a general sense that the focus now is on opening up, and it really shows you what a successful vaccination program can achieve in contrast to the mess that is happening across the English Channel and the European Union right now.
I want to concentrate on the good news before we cross the channel, all right? They must have been saying this for several thousand years. Before we go over there, let's stay here. Now, Boris Johnson has often been in the news for bumbling. Is he suddenly getting a reputation for getting it right, or is this an accident of history?
Well, I think that there's always, in public policy, there's always an element of savvy about it, and then also an element of sheer dumb luck. And they have benefited from the fact that they did manage to sprint ahead of a couple other countries in approving these vaccines. I think that Boris Johnson's government was, along with the U.S., very savvy about throwing a lot of money at a lot of different companies that were developing the vaccine so that they would be able to guarantee an early supply. I think that right now that does seem to be helping him. He seems to be pretty popular. He's managing to keep the parliament together as they have some difficult votes on still extending some of the lockdown provisions for another few months. He's not out of the woods yet. There's talk of the desire for an inquiry of some sort into mistakes that the government made in its earlier handling of the pandemic. So I think that politically a lot of what is going to happen over the next few weeks and the next month or two is going to be really important for figuring out what direction Boris Johnson's political future is going to go. And he needs for this vaccination program to continue full speed ahead and to continue paying off in terms of these better health outcomes if he's going to have any chance of weathering some of this political pressure that he's going to start facing.
At the same time, we've done the good news. We have a story that's developed over these last days. I believe it was still organizing itself when we last talked, Joe. This is about the University of Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, which you've reported you have had the shots for the vaccine, AstraZeneca. The report is from Washington. Headline, COVID, AstraZeneca vaccine 79% effective with no increased blood clot risk, U.S. trial. Study of over 32,000 people included review of risks of cerebral venous sinus thrombosis. The first paragraph. The COVID-19 vaccine developed by Oxford University and AstraZeneca was 79% effective in preventing symptomatic illness in a large trial in the U.S., Chile, and Peru, the company said, paving the way for to apply for approval in the U.S. We're going to clear that vaccine. That's the regulatory process. And yet, the reporting is your European allies are rejecting the vaccine, or are they? I can't tell. Are they sending it back? Are they holding on to what they've got? Are they demanding more? Are they blaming Britain because it's associated with a British invention at some point?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there, and I don't think that the Europeans know what's going on there either anymore. I mean, my colleagues at the Journal and I have referred to them as the gang that couldn't shot straight, and I think that that is describing what's happening with the vaccine program right now. I mean, if listeners cast their minds back a month or so, the AstraZeneca vaccine had already been approved in the UK and had gone into a large number of arms here, and yet you had European regulators who were sort of, you know, complaining about how there wasn't enough evidence of whether it was effective in people over the age of 65. So they stopped administering it for those age groups and told everyone that it wouldn't work for the elderly, even while the evidence was mounting in the UK that it was phenomenally effective in that age group. And then all of a sudden, the European regulators changed their tune and decided that it was effective. But by that point, they had persuaded so many people not to take it that they ended up with all of these doses of this vaccine accumulating because people wanted to hold out for the Pfizer vaccine instead. And then all of a sudden, you have last week these dubious safety complaints about whether this vaccine might cause blood clotting, even though, again, in the UK, we have enormous real-world evidence of some 11 million people who have received this vaccine now and determined that it is very safe. In fact, people who have received this vaccine seem to experience less instances of clotting disorders than people who have not had the vaccine. So the European regulators have again changed course and are now asking people to accept this thing. But the problem is the European politicians are now asking people to receive a shot that those same politicians have said on two separate occasions for two different wrong reasons it didn't work or wasn't safe. And so I don't know what their way out of this jam is going to be at this point, because, you know, at the same time, they're also complaining they don't have enough of this thing that they keep suggesting is dangerous for people. So it is a total mess over there, and I think that the U.S. and the U.K. programs look much more effective by comparison.
Joe, we at one time talked about this as vaccine nationalism, and I see that term used now in the London Times, in the London Telegraph, in the Financial Times, the big papers in London. Is this then slipping away from science, even away from politics, into the nationalist postures of these different countries? Not EU countries, but France, Germany, Belgium, Italy, everybody taking a different approach to a common vaccine.
Well, what's interesting about this is that I am detecting the nationalism a bit less in terms of the approval and the safety issues. There, I think the problem is just that the Europeans are prone to a culture of safetyism, which is, you know, the exaggeration of perceived dangers or threats, even if there isn't really any scientific evidence that those things exist. At the expense of, you know, thinking about the real world benefits and making rational trade-offs. So I think that on the one hand, you have the safetyism problem and the regulatory bureaucracy, which has really impeded the approval of these things. But where the vaccine nationalism is starting to show up is good old fashioned trade policy, because, you know, the other news over these past day, you know, few days has been the European Union starting to talk about whether it will limit exports of AstraZeneca vaccine doses that are produced within the European Union because the government wants to make sure that they will be able to have a constant supply of this. Now, I mean, laugh all you want about the fact that, you know, one hand of the European Union apparatus is saying that this shot is dangerous while the other half is saying they want more of it. That is really the trade policy that they're pursuing here. That's very dangerous because I think that these vaccines rely on global supply chains. The reality is that you are not able to produce every medicine in every country in the world. And so I think that the global health and safety relies to a certain extent on countries being willing to trade these things. And that means that the European Union needs to not be using trade policy as a lever to try to get their failed vaccination program going again.
I'm speaking with Joseph Sternberg, a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's based in London, writing the political economics column. When we come back, we'll turn to the contest between the EU about the vaccine, or is it about the virus, or is it about trade policy, or is it about Brexit, or is it? I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show.